Film City Video. This is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. This is Russ Burlingame and Zach Roberts. We're kind of the usual new release wall staff.
Yep.
And this is a different kind of new release wall. One of the things we've talked about a lot is that we wanted to talk some television. And because we spent the weekend at the DC and DC event, and because there's a great prestige pilot coming out of that event that airs tonight, Zach and I are doing a new release wall for the pilot of Black Lightning.
Yes. Super, super excited for this.
One thing we should say first, just because I had been planning to do something special for this, but there's content all the time.
Yeah.
this is officially our 50th episode of the Emerald City Video Podcast.
Oh, crap.
Yay.
Anything to throw around. Confetti. Imagine we can digitally add it later.
We'll add it.
When we get a budget.
But yeah, originally there were a handful of things I wanted to do, and I'll still probably do some of those things if you look at our website, which is now emeraldcityvideo.net, you can see all of our episodes, and it will tell you that there have been 52.
Yep.
But the reason for that is because there's an episode of my comics podcast and an episode of my psych podcast, which I also double published to here because I felt that they spoke to things that we were talking about on the show, and so they're kind of bonus features.
Yes.
So this is our 50th episode, and we're going to be talking about a TV show for what is technically the first time, really.
Yeah.
So, Zach, why don't you start up, because...
Because I had to explain what this show was to a couple people, because I'm super excited about it, not only after we got the opportunity to... you got the opportunity to talk to a bunch of the cast. I got the opportunity to listen to you talking to the cast through the camera. so I felt like I was involved. Can you give people a quick rundown of the who, what, where, when, and why of Black Lightning? Because I think it's more significant than just, there's another comic book. It's not like, we had Arrow, we had Flash, we have, League. It's a little bit more significant than that.
Yeah, absolutely. In comics, we have essentially two different classifications of characters. There's the characters who appear either in backups and other people's stuff, or in miniseries, or in, big anthology type of books like Showcase and whatever. And those characters tend to be kind of second or third tier characters who can't support their own book. The characters who everybody considers to be A-listers are the ones who get their own ongoing monthly series, which can run forever.
Yep.
The average one only really lasts about 2 years, but you look at things like Action Comics, which has been running since 1938. So the first time that a DC superhero of color ever had his own ongoing series was Black Lightning in the mid-70s. And so he has this kind of enormous baggage with him as a member of the... As the kind of most visible black superhero at DC in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that what we're getting is we're getting a Black Lightning show, which is the first time that either Marvel or DC has had a black hero headlining their own show on network television.
Yeah.
Obviously, Luke Cage came out on Netflix last year, so it's not the first time a black superhero from Marvel or DC has had their own series.
Yeah,
and there have been other superhero shows that were headlined by black actors, but they were typically not like traditional superheroes. You would get things like Meteor Man, which I think might have been a movie. There was a TV show, Mantis, maybe? There was a TV show in the 90s that was black superhero, but he was like created for television. I know that obviously Spawn had an animated series that ran for a long time, and he's like, before he became a demon, he was black.
Yeah.
But
kind of like Black Asterisk with Spawn.
Yeah. A black character whose face looks like Deadpool's. It's all mangled.
Yeah.
Who you never see him take off his mask except for once in a blue moon anyway. So he's basically Spider-Man. He could be anybody under there, which is great for kind of depersonalizing the hero and allowing anybody to be represented by him. Yeah. But when you're talking about the history of representation in superhero media, which is of course kind of the biggest media that exists right now, Black Lightning is a big kind of step forward. And obviously that coming hand in hand with Black Panther, which is going to be Marvel's first African-American led feature film, which comes out in theaters a month from last week. I think it's February 6th.
I think that's
obviously right. This is a kind of historically loaded time for these properties.
Yeah.
And so, Black Lightning is, I mean, on the face of it, he's kind of just another superhero in the sense that he is a guy who shoots lightning out of his hands and can do a bunch of electricity-related stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to him than that because he is one of the most significant Black superheroes ever created. And also, when you look at this show, it's handled very differently because it's very much a show about family and community that happens to have superpowers. And so it is, when you look at the construction of the television series, it feels very much like a Black show.
In terms
of not just because he's a character of color, but because you know the kind of show that I'm talking about. You know the kind of shows that are constructed to appeal primarily to African American audiences.
Yeah.
And this is really the first time that a network has run with a show like that. Because even when you look at a superhero series like the ones I referenced before, excepting obviously Luke Cage, which is a different animal. But when you look at the previous attempts to use Black superheroes, it's never been a show that was being marketed to an African-American audience. It was always just kind of a superhero show that they hoped Black people would also get excited about, just like everybody gets excited.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this show... I'm getting a little echo on your part, but and this show is also really, really owning the time. It's not even just like, obviously, I'm sure that there'll be some jokes and side things in Black Panther, but Black Panther is very much in the world of comic books and in a nation state that doesn't actually exist, and you know, and it's a secret. Yeah, you know, all the background with that.
It's one of those podcast episodes. You cannot have explicit or kind of on the nose commentary on Trumpism because you've got a president who is fictional and who was designed in Captain America Civil War to represent certain things that didn't exist back then because Trumpism wasn't a thing yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even more so, I mean, like in Black Lightning, and obviously we've both seen the screener. So we're talking from knowledge, they go so far as Black Lightning, his principal is a principal of a school. It's very, he's got like a Stand By Me sort of Morgan Freeman thing going on, but like a little bit more badass. Maybe not so badass. I mean, literally Morgan Freeman carried a baseball bat in that one. And
one of the things One of the things I thought was actually really interesting about the pilot is that you know from context that he is a superhero, that he's a person who has superpowers. But in the context of the pilot, he is treated as someone who is impotent in a lot of ways. Yeah. He's created this kind of island of calm in the middle of this chaotic community in the sense that his school is ostensibly protected from harm. But as soon as that calm is threatened and he goes out to essentially negotiate on behalf of his people, nobody respects him. He's constantly being physically threatened, and everybody just assumes he's another 50-year-old, middle management type who they can push around.
Yeah, kind of the guy that sold out was, sold out and kind of tried to, have like, I don't know whether this is a charter school or whatever. I mean, there's a whole kind of weird background to it that it feels like he has more ownership over this school than a normal principal might. And there's some,
I feel like that's going to be dealt with down the line. I mean, even from the interviews, I don't know specifically, but I do know that, his background, which they are carrying over to the show, is that he was an Olympic athlete.
Yes. Yeah.
Before he got superpowers. And so he's already kind of the town is called Freeland. It's actually supposed to be Richmond, California, but they call it Freeland for the sake of the show. And he's kind of Freeland's favorite son. The fact that he came back from his multi-million-dollar luxurious life and now goes back to his hometown to be the principal and to try and bring peace to his neighborhood makes him, you know, they call him Black Jesus repeatedly
yes.
in the pilot.
Yep.
And so he definitely has a lot more sway, I would say, with like politicians and the school yep. board and things like that than you would expect a principal to do. But on the other hand, we see him in the opening moments of this pilot getting an award from a state senator because he has managed to essentially double the graduation rate and cut in half the incarceration rate in his high school.
Yeah, and it should be noted again, back to the fact that this is very much supplanted in a real world. The state senator is literally Nina Turner. State senator from Ohio. Well, she's now not a state senator, but I think she's on the board of Our Revolution with Bernie Sanders. And
she
things
founded
like that.
It. Yeah.
But yeah, she's like a badass activist, unbelievable human being as well. Really cares about voting rights. So, I mean, this show really, really, really owns the world. It's not just finding some, you know, not even just going so far as finding like all the great Black actors to get minor roles or do whatever else. Like, oh, that guy from that's super important from back in the day. But like Nina Turner is like any activist, you know, in the progressive world, the moment you actually realize, oh my God, it really is when they call her and they literally, her name is Turner. I don't know if they actually say Nina Turner or not in it, but
I don't like, think Senator so. Turner. I think I would have noticed. You noticed.
Yeah.
I hadn't.
Yeah, seen no, I just, I had the moment where I'm like that. Can't, I feel like I would have heard that. it was her. But then later on, Roland Martin, who's a commentator and has his own, I think mostly online news network, really, really, very, very popular within the African-American community, is a big columnist for Black newspapers. And so again, like one of those, and I think there's a handful of other kind of Easter egg people in there. I'm pretty sure we're still trying to figure out who's this one guy in a convenience store. Is really, really certain it's somebody. I can't match his face. So I mean, this show, Nevermind, also has also kind of owned the, like, there's moments where like the mayor says, you know, call something fake news. So I mean, like, this is really, really owning the current world in which we exist, and pretty damn up to date. More like, I would say again, I think the Luke Cage parallel is pretty good. I don't know what the turnaround, you know, time wise or whatever, but obviously fake news has been a thing since whatever.
I mean, it's actually not the first show on the CW to do the fake news thing. Supergirl did it in their premiere this year. I will say the commentary in this show feels less on the nose than Supergirl. I have no problem with the on the nose commentary. I think there's a place for it and that it's definitely serving something on Supergirl. But I will say that here it feels more like it's addressing these things than on Supergirl. A lot of the time it just feels like it's parading them out. It's not really addressing them it's not addressing them in a way that's going to solve anything or answer anything or to inform anything. It's really just they're kind of Easter eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, look, we're addressing, you know, but here it's very much more about, we want to have a conversation about this, you know, in the first 5 minutes of the pilot, the main character gets pulled over for driving while Black.
Yeah.
And it goes about as well as you would expect it to.
And it's and I should say, because obviously we should talk about that scene because it's out there and people have talked about it, but and it's extraordinarily interesting that they decided to have, because they literally parade him in front of the woman who is accused, you know, basically saying her convenience store was it? I think it was a store liquor was store. Robbed, liquor store was robbed, and it's I believe a Korean or Chinese woman, which literally I just finished watching. LA 92, which was about the LA riots after the Rodney King riots. And the entire storyline there, and anyone who's old enough to remember those riots, was between basically the Korean and Korean community and the African-American community, and how there was like that kind of almost started the whole thing. So they are really, really, really kind of digging a little bit deeper than I think they even would have to on, say, some other shows that do like a special episode that's about black, you know, about Black Lives Matter or something like that. But so I'm of course loving it. But yeah, continue. Sorry.
I will say too, one of the things that Salim Akil, who's the executive producer, said is that they want to deal with police violence, and they want to deal with. He kind of embraces the label of black on black crime. He's talking about the fact that guns in this show are going to be a major thing.
Yeah.
And that he wants to address the gun issue in this country, and that you can't, as much as it's politically convenient to ignore black on black crime if you are trying to construct your narrative about police violence, and as much as it's convenient to ignore police violence if you're trying to build a narrative about black on black crime, he's not interested in either, because he thinks that constructing a world where both exist is gives the show more verisimilitude than most other, as you say, very special episodes would have.
It's also very interesting that they don't have, which is something that I was kind of worried about, the generic 100, which is this, basically it's the Crips or the Bloods, you name decide, that basically owns the area. Like, they're by far much more pervasive than the Bloods or the Crips would actually have been. Like, they literally have a club called, what, Club 100? I mean, like, so they're not, it's like right there. But I'm kind of happy that I'm seeing that they're not doing the usual comic book thing where it's a generically mixed race gang, or usually, like, you used to have, like, you know, whether even acted like Daredevil or something like that, he would fight crime figures and they'd be like a black guy, Hispanic guy, and a white guy, and you're like, we all know that that's not usually how gangs work. They're the white gangs, but so it's interesting because that's going to be something I think going forward that's going to be not only talked a lot about, but you don't. They are dealing with things that racial shows, if you can, very generic idea of, like, just basically where you have a predominantly African-American cast, they deal with where they're like, oh, we don't want to, you know, you have people who are usually it's white guys in the writer's room who are like, I don't know if I want to have, you know, this massive, you have to deal with the black on black crime issue and everything else, which is, you know, its own show upon itself. And
and it's become that phrase has become a dog whistle for the worst kinds of people.
Yeah.
And so unless it's handled correctly and unless it's handled in a way that speaks to the black experience in a way that an all white writer's room is almost certainly not going to, it immediately becomes a problem.
Yeah.
And so one thing that I think is definitely worth noting is that the head of the 100, let's say the 100, because the 100 is actually a show on the CW.
A different CW property, yes.
Yes, very much like Supergirl's boyfriend is named Valor, which is also the name of a show that airs immediately following Supergirl.
And also the 100, at least the last time I saw an episode of it, is mostly white, but yes.
It's
a decent lyric. I would say, anyway, but yeah, it's...
Anyway, But the head of the gang is Tobias Whale. He's a character from the comics. He is an albino black man.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen in the very, very limited screen time he gets in the pilot, they're definitely going to speak to kind of that element of his being almost isolated from both the black and white communities. I can't remember if it's in the pilot or if it's in the second episode that he uses a racial epithet. But that's very, very, very soon after his introduction, one of his very first lines. And, that's one of those things where you're sitting here going, it's very unusual for, a black character in a network show to use those kinds of, that kind of terminology, at least in the way that he used it. Cause he's not like a gangbanger who's just dropping the N-word every third word because it's part of his vernacular. He uses it very deliberately and with intent to hurt. And that's not something you often see from, you know. And so I'm very interested to see how they deal with that element of it as well.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Oh, it's just one of those things. It's always hard to have these conversations on some level because, like, we're, like, middle-aged, middle-income white dudes.
Yeah.
And
well, speak for yourself on middle-income, but yeah. but yeah, no, I mean, there's an inherent problem. I mean, no matter how much time you spend either talking about it or whatever, I mean, the fact that we are, I mean, most of the podcasts, most of the shows that we do are, you know, a bunch of white guys. And that, I mean, that was one thing that, you know, not to sidetrack, but one thing that,
right.
When we did this, DC and DC over the weekend, which was literally the idea was DC's like, let's actually have these conversations, which usually, there's usually a panel at some Comic-Con about race or sex or, you know, sexual harassment or Me Too or whatever, that type of thing. But they're usually like Sunday, late afternoon, and literally in a broom closet somewhere in one of the halls. You don't
or even usually, if it's, yeah. Even if it's better, even if it's not that, even if it's fairly well attended, yeah, it'll be programmed against. Well,
yeah, yeah. That also, the
bigger problem you'll get it programmed against, like, the Walking Dead panel, and so, yeah, like, yeah, it's funny. Like, one of the people I interviewed, who was a panel, like, a moderator at this thing, mm-hmm. was Jamie Broadnax from Black Girl Nerds.
Yeah,
and I feel like she spends most of her life moderating these panels at Comic Cons all over the country.
Yeah. I think they made the joke, they're just like, oh, from one moderator to another.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, because she wasn't actually a moderator this time. She was on the panel. And she does, like, she's a really smart, really thoughtful person who does a lot of interesting work. And usually, like you said, she's either buried in a broom closet talking to nine people, or the program is, it's like, oh, well, nobody wants to be against the Walking Dead panel, so we need to find something to fill a room.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, it'd be like, basically it's the overflow of the overflow.
Yeah, exactly.
But what was interesting about this, this weekend is the fact that they, it was basically all of that. And then the one thing that I think one of the actual people that walked by or for the red carpet when we were having an off moment was, yeah, this is not usually what a comic book journalist's room looks like. Usually it is not. It was because it was literally we were the lesser percentage of skin color in the room, and the fact that it was like 80% African American, which was awesome because it's one of those things that I didn't even know that there were that many people writing, like, because, you know, writers in most of the, you know, journalists press rooms or whatever, usually it's, again, you know, New York Comic Con, all these other places, it's 80% white. And then
a lot of that is just Black Lightning. When I went, did my set visit, there were, I think, 13 of us.
Well, and my point was, is that DC is, it kind of shows another sign is that DC knows what this property is and is actually, and CW, obviously CW is caring, is knowing that it's going to have to get the love of this audience to really push it. Because I think that there's more than enough people to keep the show at the numbers than it needs to be, especially on the CW, but on any network that would like it. But I think that it's already in the first episode dealing with a ton of things really straight out, like you were talking about the police scene at the start of the show when basically his powers revive after he gets pulled over for, you know, driving while Black. And that immediately, the fact that the officer he has the interaction with is an older white guy, and the way that he talks to him, it's, you know, what we've seen and heard a million times over, that could have changed the way that it was going, could have happened very differently. Mm-hmm. But it'll be interesting to see how this is perceived. It's gotten a ton of good buzz. It's already been getting buzz, but the people.
Yeah, it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Which obviously we've talked at length about the kind of fundamental flaws to Rotten Tomatoes and the idea that whether it's 2.5 stars or 5 stars, it's, if it's over 2.5, it becomes positive instead of negative. But, like, that generally means that, you know, you've got 170 or whatever it is reviews, and it's certified at 100% last time I looked, because it means that nobody is saying the show's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you'd be very stressed to do an honest review saying that it's bad. Maybe there's some issues. I don't know. I can't think of much.
There were some tropes that it falls into because they're world building on the fly and you get some shorthand. But there's nothing inherently really wrong with tropes as long as you don't do them badly.
Yeah.
And, I was talking with, after the screening on Saturday, I was at a party with a couple of the writers, ironically from The 100, and they were saying that this was one of those pilots where you just watch it and you're like, you can see some of the seams cause you know, like that TV isn't perfect, but at the same time, like it just feels like a pilot to a show that's going to go on for a long time. It feels like something is working and clicking in a way that typically if you're either work in the industry or if you're like me and you like work around this industry full time, I can usually watch the first 20 minutes of a pilot and be like, that will work. That won't work.
Yeah.
Because you see the same things succeed and fail in a lot of ways over and over and over again. And this feels to me like a show that should succeed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that my only thing that I would pull from it is just like, I just wish it had like, I don't know, a couple, I don't know what percentage budget more. But it's for, especially for CW pilot and everything like that, it's the effects and the fighting and everything like that. And it's also one thing I actually enjoy is the fact that not I'm thinking about it more, like his fighting style when he becomes Black Lightning actually wears the costume and everything.
Right.
His fighting style, it's like he's a 50-year-old guy. Like, so it's like, oh yeah, yeah. Because I mean, like meeting him as an actor, usually the superheroes you meet and you're like, yeah, well, I could see him doing a lot of the things in real life, especially now that there's very, very few out of shape superheroes out there in movies and TV. Maybe like 10, 15 years ago, you might even have that where you're like, okay, well, they'll always wear their costume and maybe they'll wear a girdle or something like that. You have a little Shatner sort of thing. But nowadays it's like, no, almost all of them do shirtless scenes. So they have to be ripped beyond human comprehension and actually be able to do a lot of the, things in real life. And he's a very just like, he looks like a dad. Like he's a very,
I mean, don't get me wrong. He's a tall, muscular.
But just is the way that he comes off, which is actually kind of perfect. Like he comes off as a dad, which is what he is in the show. And which is, I think, part of the reason I think the show might work really well. And it'll be a very interesting comparison. Like maybe a couple episodes in, we can revisit and kind of talk about it in comparison to Black Lightning, Black Panther, and also compare it to Luke Cage, where you have very, very different. You have Luke Cage, who is, his physical embodiment. He doesn't have superpowers in the way that he shoots lightning or anything like that. Yeah. He just is able to beat the hell out of people. And then you have, basically an acrobatic Black Panther. Yeah, exactly. Like, but more so like Black Batman, if Batman and Captain America had a black baby. and there's the moment that's going to go viral, it's in that way too. Like I like that because it also, it's the type of show where I think I might actually be able to sell my mom on watching it. Which would be a really big get because I'm like, I was surprised. I got her to watch Riverdale, which was, but that's not, that doesn't feed as a comic book. If you didn't know it was that, I don't know if you'd know. I don't know if you know, other than they're like, wait, it's weird that they're named Archie and Betty and Veronica.
Yeah, exactly.
But in this, like, I think it reads enough as there's enough family drama stuff going on that at least in the first episode, because they're establishing family dynamics and characters, that it might actually be able to feed, I hope, into a more, middle white America.
So. I like the fact, by the way, that you said it's weird that they're Archie and Betty and Veronica, but it's totally normal that dude's named Jughead.
Well, I mean, I feel like Archie, Betty, and Veronica, like people know.
Yeah.
You say Archie, it's the name of the comic book company. So it's like, it's not confusing, like, Captain Marvel or anything like that.
Yeah. But, one of the things that we should talk about before we go, because again, I have to go watch The Flash in a minute. is the violence on the street. You talked a little bit about the fighting and such, and how well the action was kind of choreographed. But the other thing about the violence on the show that I found interesting was there's blood spatter after gunshots.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that people die.
Yeah. Yeah, and so to me, like that, and again, these are things that we watched the pilot. I went and talked to the showrunner on the set, and he said that this was an intentional decision because he has seen people die. He has held his dying friends. He knows what guns do to a human body.
Yeah.
And so he didn't want to make it everybody who gets shot in the shoulder and only bleed into their black shirt and you never see, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that, like, there's a lot of elements like that that really it make the world feel more real and it makes the world feel more complete.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a show that is doing a very good job of kind of establishing a world where it's not, you know, this is the thing I've been saying since the first time I saw the pilot. It's not a superhero show that's aspiring to be prestige TV. Which is how I would describe a lot of like the Marvel Netflix stuff and things, where there's nothing wrong with that, and that turns out some very good material, but I do think that there's a ceiling to where you can go with that philosophy,
yeah.
As opposed to aspiring to be prestige TV that also has superpowers,
yeah.
That's a different thing, and it has potentially a whole different audience to it. On that note, we should wrap up because we, you know, as I said, I only have a couple minutes.
And also, we don't want to spoil too much of it. I mean, I think we spoiled.
Yeah, yeah.
Talked about it.
I will say, show notes, I will include a link to my full review, which is also a non-spoiler review, but it does go into more details and it uses some quotes from the set visit and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, share, subscribe if you are listening to us via audio. If you are watching us on YouTube, I guess you can like, share, and subscribe there too. That's actually kind of the same philosophy. Yeah. But you can follow me at Russ Burlingame, RussBurlingame. You can follow the podcast at ECV_podcast. Both of those things are on Twitter. On Facebook, you can find me at Russ Burlingame and the show at Emerald City Video Podcast. And as I said, our website is emeraldcityvideopodcast.net. Here's where you can find Zach.
At ZD Roberts on Twitter, Zach D Roberts on Facebook. And, I'm going to post this over, do our first official cross post over at, visu.news, because this is inherently a political thing. And I'm writing up my own review right now of the show, which I hope it'll be over at Nation of Change. If not, it'll be at, visu.news. So thanks again. And thanks for listening.
All right. Thank you.